Welcome back to the Irish NFL show with me, Noel Dowling. With the draft now just 7 days away, I'm delighted to be joined by ESPN draft analyst Jordan Reid. Jordan, welcome to the show. I'd say you're pretty busy these days at the moment.
No problem. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure being here.
Excellent. I hope you're getting enough sleep now with the draft coming up. You're not working too hard.
Not at all. Sleep is not in my vocabulary right now.
I imagine this is like Christmas Day coming for you fairly soon now. 7 days away, it goes quickly.
Yeah, it does. It feels like the lead up to Christmas for me. I'm like a little kid just staring at the tree every single day. I can't wait for some more presents to be under there. Every single NFL fan is wondering what's going to be inside some of those presents that they're going to unwrap here in about a week or so.
That's it. It certainly is a great time of the year for an NFL fan. Jordan, before I kind of dive into any specific players or teams, just in general, when it comes to the 2024 draft overall this year, how does it kind of compare to previous years? Is it, you know, is it a strong all the way through, or does it kind of start strong and as it goes down, kind of get that kind of little bit weaker?
Well, I will say the first two strongest positions, or the strongest positions in this year's draft, are offensive tackle and wide receiver. I think we have two very strong offensive tackle and then also wide receiver classes. It wouldn't surprise me if six or seven from either group eventually get drafted in the first round. So wide receiver classes is something that we've seen be very strong over the past few years or so. And I think that's a combination of a lot of things. You know, high school, college, 707, the increase of that really being more popular now, I think we're always going to continue to get that feeder system of wide receiver classes being strong entering the NFL, and then also offensive tackle classes. This is something that we haven't seen really since about 2 or 3 years ago with the Penei Sewell draft. I think that was a very strong very strong offensive tackle class overall, but this year's class just takes it to another level. It's probably the best one since we've seen since 2008. That group had seven drafted in the first round, which was a record. And this year's group could tie or even break that record.
Yeah, no, they certainly are two really strong position groups there being covered in the draft now this year. In terms of first, I'll kind of actually touch on them, but I just wanted to kind of jump into the number one pick first. It's, you know, it's not going to be much of a surprise, I don't think, now at this stage when you come to the number one pick. I think we all kind of believe Caleb Williams will go to the Bears, or, you know, is there a chance there could be a twist? Is that how you see it going? Or do you think maybe could it be something they could throw at us? And if it is the way it goes, do you think that's the right move for the Bears to bring Caleb in as that number one draft pick?
I'd be really surprised if they did not go with Caleb Williams at number one overall. That's kind of been the presumed number one overall pick for about a month or so now. Now that the combine and the pre-draft process is really coming to the conclusion of everything, everybody that I talk to expect Caleb to be the number one overall pick. So I would be really surprised if it's not him. And, you know, for Chicago, it's a blessing in disguise for them just because they closed the book on Justin Fields now. That chapter of everything is closed now. But Caleb, I think he's a transcendent talent. He's a player that can come in and have an instant impact. And the Bears, they haven't had a franchise quarterback really since the days of Jay Cutler, in my honest opinion, as far as some longevity over a long period of time. So Caleb Williams, he's hopefully going to bring some stability to the position. And then also, I think he can be a franchise-changing type of quarterback, too.
Absolutely. I think that deal Ryan Poles did last year with the Panthers has worked out pretty nicely when it comes to the Chicago Bears this year. But in terms of the quarterback as a whole, as we mentioned, it kind of looks nailed on for number one. There's no excitement to that one anymore. But when the college season ended, it felt like Caleb Williams and Drake May were kind of like the two standout names in terms of quarterback. But obviously, you know, we've seen it every year. As time goes on, players trying to move up and down. And at the moment now, it looks like, if you believe what we kind of hear, that the Commanders will probably go for Daniels at the number two spot rather than May. I mean, do you think that's how that's going to play out? Or how do you kind of see the quarterback market kind of play out at that top of the draft? Because we know the Commanders go second. They desperately need a quarterback. The Patriots are towards. They desperately need one. Although you hear rumblings that maybe they might drop down a little bit. How do you kind of see it first play out between Daniels and May? And then of those three teams, you know, how do you kind of see them go?
That's the big question right now. I think the draft really starts with the number two overall pick. And nobody knows what the Commanders are going to do. Everybody is pretty much assumed that Jaden Daniels is going to be the second overall pick. I don't have any information about that, who's going to be the second overall pick. I don't even think they know in the building what they're going to do right now. So I think that's the big question mark that everybody really wants answered. right now, but we know it's going to be between one of J.J. McCarthy, Drake May, or Jaden Daniels. There's three different ways that they could go with that number two overall pick, and I'm interested to see how it does unfold. Now with New England, I think that's another interesting pick as well, just because they're likely going to pick a quarterback if they do stick and pick. Now, there's no guarantee that they do stick at number three overall, just because there's going to be a lot of QB needy teams that could come up and select the quarterback that they might not like on their draft board, whether that's a Drake May, a Jaden Daniels, or even a J.J. McCarthy. So it's going to be really interesting to see that second and third overall pick. But I think Washington is going to stay and stick and pick. But New England, I think, is very debatable as far as what they're going to do right now.
And you mentioned J.J. McCarthy there. He's had a bit of a meteoric rise. If you kind of go back to, as I say, when the college season ended and he was being talked about later on in the first round. Now he's being talked about, you know, at times I've heard people say he'll go above May. And, you know, there was for a brief time, people talked about him going second. I mean, what do you put that kind of a rise down for a quarterback who just out of nowhere suddenly starts moving up that board after the season has ended?
Well, it's what I like to call the QB tax, just because it's such an important position. It's going to be uplifted just because nothing matters on your roster as far as your rebuild until you get that quarterback spot solidified. And we're seeing that with the Chicago Bears right now. The Chicago Bears have a very impressive roster from top to bottom, but they don't have that quarterback spot solidified. So with J.J. McCarthy, there is a lot of intrigue with him just because he's very young. He just turned 21 years old in January. And then also the times that he was allowed to throw the ball at Michigan, he was very efficient, whether that's on third down where he had a 67% completion percentage, or even off of play action where he completed 76% of his passes a season ago. So there's a lot of intrigue with J.J. and with coaches, NFL coaching. They always feel as if they have the secret ingredients to help uncover that next stage of a quarterback's development. So I think that's why there's so much intrigue about J.J. and why there's a lot of buzz that he could be a top 10 or even go as high as the top five.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of quarterbacks, when we look a little further back in the draft, you know, there always are a number of teams who are quarterback needy. But like the Vikings, for example, seem like they have built a team that's just waiting for this kind of young rookie quarterback to come into. They've obviously locked up a bit of ammunition there in terms of getting number 11 and number 23. You know, is it possible maybe, you know, how do we see this team played out? You know, I've heard a lot of people talk about them making big, big jumps forward. Realistically, how far can they go? And just your own personal opinion, you know, do you think they will kind of make that big jump up to try and steal a quarterback later or earlier on in the draft?
I think three is the highest that they can go, just because I don't see Chicago or Washington moving, just because both of those teams obviously need a quarterback. So once again, it goes back to New England. If their first or their second option is not on the board, are they comfortable with selecting their third option at number three overall? That's the big question that they have to answer. Now with Minnesota, I think it would take what I like to call a godfather type of offer of multiple first-round picks in order to get New England to even think about moving off of that spot. Now, what's going to push them over the edge in favor of making that deal with them? I think it could take three first-round picks, so whether that's 11, 23, and a future one, or even adding some more draft capital onto that. But once again, it goes back to how comfortable is New England with the quarterback that is available to them at number three overall, and are they in favor of selecting and building around that guy at number three overall? If not, then Minnesota likely would be the one team that is looking to trade up to secure the rights of another quarterback.
Absolutely. And then there's a couple of other quarterbacks who aren't obviously in that group, but we have like Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix. Do you think these are guys who could go, because of how important it is nowadays to have a quarterback on a rookie contract and how just big that is for a team? Do you think these guys could go later on in the first round, or do you think the second round is maybe where they will end up going?
It really just depends on who you ask, honestly. There's so many different opinions about both of them. I think one of them is going to go in the first round. If I had to guess right now, it probably ends up being Bo Nix. I have Michael Penix graded higher than Bo Nix, but when you just look at the resume of both of those guys and you're considering that Nix has been healthier over time, I think he would be the one that ends up going in the back end of the first round, but it wouldn't surprise me if Penix does end up going in the back end of the first round. But once again, it just matters who you talk to, and there's so many different opinions about both.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned earlier on, you kind of touched on the wide receivers. We know when it comes to the wide receiver class, there's the big tree of Marvin Harrison Jr., Neighbors, and Odunze. And then obviously the class as a whole has got a lot of positive kind of talk from people. So I take it the way you mentioned earlier, do you believe that those three first off are, you know, they deserve the praise of getting, that these three guys are that good? And then the class as a whole, do you stand by the fact that you think that this is really a good class, and teams later on in draft will benefit from getting a very good wide receiver, you know, later on?
Yeah, I think this is an elite wide receiver class, especially at the top. And I mean, you can throw all those guys' names in a hat and pick one out, and you'll be just fine with any of the three that you pick. That's just how special this class is overall. I think Marvin is the best of the bunch. He's actually my top-ranked player overall in this draft class. I think he's that type of talent. He's that elite of a prospect. Then the other two, they're not very far at all. As far as behind him, I have Neighbors as my third overall prospect, and I have Odunze as 7. So we're talking about three players that are inside of the top 10 overall, but each are different in their own right. Neighbors is much more explosive than the other two, and I think the other two are more polished than what Neighbors does provide. But I think all three are going to be really good pros and be wide receiver ones on the next level.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the offensive tackles there earlier on as well. Looks a good group. Is there any group, though, Jordan, that maybe isn't getting as much hype that you look at and say, do you know what, actually, sneakily, there are some good players in there that, you know, if teams get these players, they'll get a really kind of good player that just maybe could be overshadowed by the wide receivers and the tackles and the quarterbacks?
Believe it or not, it's actually center. This center class has really grown on me. I wasn't high on it coming into the season. And then throughout the season, I was a little bit skeptical about it. But as the pre-draft process has played out, I've become a fan of this center class. You know, Jackson Powers Johnson is one that I like quite a bit. Graham Barton of Duke, who I've graded as my top-ranked center. And then also Zach Frazier of West Virginia are your three guys that will probably go somewhere inside the top 45 or so picks. Then after that, there's plenty of depth behind it as well. Cedric Van Fran Granger of Georgia is one I think who has starter level qualities. Hunter Norzad of Penn State is one who I think is very underrated. And then even Bo Limmer of Arkansas, who's another down the line name that has starter level traits as well.
And in terms of, you know, positions or players who aren't being talked about, is there someone out there that is kind of a gem draft pick to you that people aren't talking about, but maybe he could go, you know, maybe high in the first round or somewhere in the first round that, you know, people haven't really predicted, but you just think, you know, this player, he could sneak up there now, you know, with a week to go, he could be a player that could kind of surprise people?
One that could be a sneaky first round pick is Marshawn Nealand, who's a defensive end out of Western Michigan. Very big defensive lineman, about 6'3", 275 pounds, played in the MAC conference. And I don't know if you ever watched any MAC football. They have random games on Wednesdays and Thursday nights, and you'll very rarely hear about any of these guys until the pre-draft process. So Nealand was one of those guys that was playing on those Wednesdays and Thursday nights and dominating on the ESPN, and then went to the Senior Bowl and did the exact same thing. So he's one player that has a lot of buzz in the league right now, and it would surprise me if he ends up being a first-round pick.
Well, I'll definitely keep an eye out for him anyway and see how that kind of works out. And just one last question. Latu, UCLA, is a player who obviously has a lot of hype, but because of a bad neck injury, and a two-year medical retirement, he came back. How do you think that will affect his stock? I know different coaches or different team doctors will look at things differently, but do you think that's going to be kind of a massive impact into his draft stock, or do you think maybe there's a team out there that will look past that and see a talent that they can bring in at maybe a great position in the draft?
It's a case-by-case basis, and we won't know. We don't have access to the medicals at all, so it really just depends on which team is comfortable with the neck, and then there's going to be some others that don't have him on their board at all just because they're not comfortable with what happened in the past. So it's just a matter of a case-by-case basis, which team is the most comfortable with selecting him, whether it's in the first round, the top 10, the top 15, or whatever. It's just a matter of, are you comfortable with the medical situations from years past?
Absolutely. But Jordan, before I let you go, I know you'll be providing full first round live analysis on ESPN.com's DraftCast tool, which is obviously a great way for fans to follow along and keep up with what's happening in the draft. Other than that, is there anything you have coming out you think the guys should keep an eye out for? And can you just let the guys know, you know, where they can find you and where they can see what you've got your work up coming?
Yeah, so I'll be on the DraftCast for day one of the draft, and then I'll be on ESPN Radio for day two and day three. So really excited about that. I have my final mock draft coming out April 22nd. which is actually next to Monday. So be on the lookout for that. It'll be all seven rounds, all 257 picks. So I'm excited to share that. And then also we have final rankings and then plenty of other things as far as buzz files and notebooks that we're sharing each week as well on ESPN Plus.
That's brilliant. I'm looking forward to myself. Obviously, I follow a lot of your work. It keeps me updated when I'm going on to the show then. So, you know, I really appreciate that. And again, Jordan, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on. And thanks to everyone for watching. Obviously, please do like and subscribe if you enjoyed the show. And please do keep an eye on the show because, like Jordan, we're going to have so much content coming out between now and the draft and afterwards. But until then, take care. Thanks.